Hello, listeners. As you'll notice, this is an extra little episode off of our regular schedule. And as such, we just wanted to take a moment and thank you all for listening to Trash Planet. This podcast has grown so much faster than I thought it would. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate that we have so many regular listeners. We have people who love our characters and love our world. I think we've really hit on something that I thought that just our little group was interested in, you know, the sort of dirty sci-fi actual play. We went into it not knowing that there was a market for it, really. We were just kind of doing it for ourselves because it was fun.
Yeah, now we've been doing it for 5 months.
5 months.
Yeah. This will be our 5th month doing it, and man, we still have quite a bit to go as well. I'm excited to show everyone what's about to happen.
At 5 months, we should be developing a deeper range of emotions. We should be able to track from side to side. That's a cognitive skill. And we should be able to get out of reach objects. Just wanted to put that out there.
Oh. Do we have object permanence yet?
Yeah, I was about to ask the same thing.
That's a really good point. But we are beginning to babble, coupled with frustration.
I think we've been arguably babbling from the beginning. But
yeah, thank you so much. Like, I can't express how much joy this has given me and how much fun I have every time we work on it. So, hell yeah, thank you for listening.
Yeah, and what's crazy is there are a good number of people that we just don't know or who aren't, like, friends of friends who are also listening to this. Like, we have listeners from outside the United States.
Shout out, Dusseldorf.
Shout out, Dusseldorf! What's up? We're obsessed with you. We don't know who you are.
Yeah, not the only one. I don't want to call out all of the country specifically, but we have a handful of listeners from Spain and Hong Kong and, of course, from Germany, a couple others. And, yeah, I would love to know how you found out about us and, you know, how you're enjoying the podcast. I'd love to hear from you. We have an email address. It's hypergallant@gmail.com. So if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, we would love to hear from you. I would
like to know, are you listening to this podcast in the car? Are you listening to this podcast while you're drawing?
I would also really like to thank our musicians that we use. The music that we have on our show, I think Nihar does this amazing job of incorporating the music into our story.
Oh, thank you.
And we really do try to use Ohio punk bands. So special shout out to The Drin, The Surfs, and Perverts Again for music that we use in almost every episode.
Yeah, they give it to us for free to use. So that's super cool of them.
Yes.
Yeah. And it gives us such a unique sound, in my opinion. Like, a lot of the big moments are really made by the music that backs them.
Yes. I really love... I picked Brood in the Bathroom, and no one cared. Everyone was like, oh, okay. And now, to me, that's the anthem. Like, I hear Brood in the Bathroom, I go, fuck yeah!
Definitely.
Absolutely. I was literally hanging out with my cousin in the lake, like, last weekend, and just being, Brood! Brood in the Bathroom! Brood!
Yeah, and on top of that, of course, as an actual play, we would like to thank Morgan Davey, Malcolm Craig, and Gregor Hutton, who wrote A-State 2nd Edition, which is our primary game. And one thing the listeners may not know is we play tested a handful of games before going into this.
And some were bad. Some were very bad.
Yeah, we don't want to call out specifically the games we didn't like, but there was just something really magical. The way this game flowed so smoothly with all of our personalities and what we wanted to do, like, we knew this was the one, and it has proven true the entire time we've been playing.
Yeah, and it was really important to me to build a game that talked about community and that was interested in community and wasn't just a roving band of maniacs who are just killing orcs or whatever, you know? And so A-State lets you build something really special with all of our NPCs and how the world plays out without us, you know? It's really cool. It's a really cool system that I appreciate playing all the time.
My favorite aspect of it is that you have so much of an opportunity to really dive into characters and scene work, and being able to do, like, flashbacks and things like that to explain what's going on. Like, that's such a cool mechanic that's not super common.
Yes.
I also really love the way that the game sort of represents characters other than the players making progress towards their own goals and things like that. Whether it's like racing clocks in a mission or just all the faction things going on in the background, I think that makes the world feel like a lot more alive and less static.
Yeah, if you do want to check out the game, the default setting is not quite as funny as Trash Planet, but I do recommend it. A-State is a great game that you should definitely check out if you're into RPGs.
Yes.
Also, special shout out to Rabbit and his custom juice deck that he's built. That's what we use for all of our juice stuff, and it's really a fun tool to play with.
It is a laminated tarot deck. Like, we use a physical deck for this, and I can't...
We're drawing cards, baby. Believe in the heart of the cards.
Yes, yeah. The heart of the cards! Yeah. In my dream, someday, I would love to illustrate a full, beautiful juice deck. So that is... I'm putting that into the universe.
And one last thing before we get back to the episode. We would really love if you guys could leave a review, especially on Apple Podcasts. It really helps for discoverability. And, you know, it's a good way for us to hear your feedback and what you like about the show. And it energizes us to keep going. So if you could do that, or maybe, I don't know, maybe you set up a multi-level marketing scheme where you get three friends to listen to the show and they get three friends to listen to the show.
Have some ambition, Devin. To get five friends to listen to the show and then their five friends get five friends to listen.
I spoke too soon. My goals are not as lofty as they should have been.
So yeah, we just wanted to give a quick thank you. And before we return to our episode, a quick note that we will still be on our normal bi-weekly schedule. So next week we will have another episode, but then after that it will be once every 2 weeks once again. And so, cut to Trash Planet.
Downtime for the rest of our friends here at the Scream and Slice reacting to Lottie's situation. Tank never responded. I think we cut back to that moment where you never heard from him. It's the rest of the day. What are we up to, gang? Who would like to go first?
I mean, I need to heal, so I'm happy to go, I guess.
I think this can be like because right now it's just Lottie and Connie talking in hushed tones while the restaurant is operating. You hear the little screams of pizza in the oven, like as the moisture leaves it. We don't talk about that enough. We do sell, we serve screaming pizza because it's the moisture leaving in the oven, and it's good. Enla, what are you up to? You're off on your own, it sounds like.
Well, no, I'm not on my own. I'm just upstairs, you know, just nursing my ego and my head. And I'd like to try to heal some of my harm, so I'm gonna try and get Lottie to return the favor of me helping her earlier.
All right, you pad downstairs to see Connie and Lottie in animated discussion. They're talking about Lottie looks kind of shaken up, you know.
What's going on, y'all?
We got some bad news.
Did somebody die?
Not that bad. It's okay, Anna.
Okay.
You know those Johnny Law guys we fought?
Yeah, I won't forget Johnny Law, no.
They caught up to me.
Are you okay?
I am, but they forced some information out of me. They know we have that disc that they handed off.
Oh, fuck.
So, we need to get whatever's off that disc, and probably, if I had to guess, destroy the disc.
Seems like a logical solution to me. We just need to get to the library, right?
Oh, fuck that. Halbert is still there. She's whisking something. She's like, fuck them. You can't trust them. Go to the library? What's this about?
Oh, we just need to get some information. We're told the library is where we can...
They're bastards. Don't... No, I'm serious about this.
Well, this is a thing I've never heard. What? Why?
Because fuck you. That's why.
Not a very convincing argument, Halbert.
Okay, but I don't need to tell you about my life, okay? So I just need to tell you, like, I'm just warning you, like, if I know something that you don't know, and, like, they will sell you down the river without a thought. That's what I'm telling you.
Who is they, Halbert?
The library.
The library
north of the canyon, right?
Right, I thought it was a place.
It's staffed.
Yeah, Enla, there's people who work... I'm sorry, I forget that your mind is so beautiful.
I'm
saying that
to someone. It's a beautiful insult. I love it so much.
That broke me.
Thank you, Albert, for giving this to me.
Oh, man.
Was that a compliment?
She pats you on the shoulder and she's just like, sweetie, don't worry about it. I love you so much. Don't go there. They're bad people. That's all I'm saying.
Well, the problem, Halbert, is we've got this disc we need to read.
Johnny Law wants it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So give it to him. Sell it to him. Fuck it.
You trust Johnny Law?
No, but they got money.
I don't know if we can do that without Tank here.
Where is this? Where is this disc?
Tank has it.
We all have a collective thought bubble of like what Tank is doing right now. Let's go around quickly and say what we imagine Tank to be doing in his moment of absence.
Well, we know he's a tryout. Right?
Yeah, but just a crayon drawing, briefly, a visual joke of imagining Tank doing tickball. What's it look like?
Inla's envisioning Tank like just like happily kind of like stroll, like running along. And like he's like throwing the ball, but like he does like a freeze frame and like a little like a Mario type pose.
We cut over to Halbert's crayon drawing, and it's Tank ripping the limbs off of someone, and big crayon blood is coming out. And she's like, "Ah, my beautiful boy."
Lottie's just imagining like normal Tank tickball drills that she's seen him do, but she's picturing the nurse's outfit.
Oh.
Connie is a tickball fan and is a Fresco Fuzz fan, and seeing his friend, like thinking about his friend as the goalie in his head, Tank just like intercepts someone by just jumping inhumanly high.
Beautiful. So much respect for his friend. Ah, okay. You came down here to get healed, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could do that.
Lottie, I know you know some things about fixing people. My head is killing me since Johnny Law hit it before. I mean,
you probably have a little bit of a concussion.
Could you help me with that?
The crayon tank starts floating by. Yeah, like, concussion. Sorry. Continue.
Well, unfortunately, Tank's not here to help with that right now.
I know, he has this great song and everything.
Yeah. Sadly, I don't know it by heart, so I can't help you that way.
If only we knew.
That's okay. I mean, I don't expect you to know all of Tank's magic.
Honestly, I don't know any of Tank's magic, but that's all right. I've got useful things up in the greenhouse we can go try.
Okay.
You might be a little loopy for the rest of the day, but it won't hurt anymore.
I'll take it.
Give me that carrot roll.
4.
That's one tick. What do you give Enla that heals her a little bit?
Nothing too special. We just hang out in the greenhouse and smoke manja and keep her mind off of it.
That sounds like my favorite kind of gardening.
Incredible. Brief cutaway to the two of you just smoking big doinks and having a beautiful time. Great job.
While the two of them are doing their healing thing, I'm up in my tent with the big sawn-off double barrel that I have.
And it's right next to your telescope. You've got them leaned up next to each other, and like for a minute you see that visual when you open your tent, and you're like, hmm.
He could put the telescope on the sawn-off shotgun.
My God! I love the idea of a children's kaleidoscope being a scope for a gun.
But I think I'm like, just in preparation for what's to come, because I, you know, Johnny Law's after us now. There's just a quick shot of me loading up like an empty shell with metal shavings and stuff.
Oh.
Like to load into the gun later. Because, I mean, we don't have, we don't have, what, like buckshot.
Yeah.
So we just have to make do.
Interesting. Okay. I like it. Lottie, what's your second action going to be?
Originally, it was going to be the big tomato, but I feel like Lottie would have shifted towards something that more immediately helpful against the Johnny Law situation.
Mm.
I guess right now she feels kind of extra threatened because there's both Johnny Law and Dort involved.
Mm. You look up at the poster. I think you're smoking with Enla, and we see you look over at your Grinders poster on the wall. This was that early meeting, hand-drawn, pretty old, pretty yellowed, pretty beat up. And you just have that moment of thinking about how it used to be when it was just a bunch of scrappy kids up against unimaginable odds. And then you just have real deep sadness and bitterness at how it all turned out. Just remembering all that history there. How does that sit with you in this moment?
So Lottie's looking up at that poster, thinking about when she was younger and kind of participating in the kind of labor revolts with the grinders, thinking about conflicts with Johnny Law, hearing about people getting potentially killed by Dort. And she kind of just turns to Enla and says, you know, Enla, these are some really bad people we're getting caught up with.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Well, and Lottie gestures up at that poster. Johnny Law especially, but probably Dort too. They're the people that we stood against way back then, right before the big drop.
That's right, you were part of the Grinders. That'd be kind of crazy time.
Yeah, it was a different time, different me, really. But I think we're gonna need their help again.
The Grinders?
They're the only ones around here that have fought them, to my knowledge.
I mean, I don't know much about them, really, but all I know is about the big drop.
Yeah, they kind of got pretty reclusive afterwards, didn't they? That's part of why I'm not with them anymore, but they've got muscle, they've got guns, and they really do not like Dort or Johnny Law.
Sounds like they could be our friends.
When Enla says, sounds like they could be our friends, Lottie, like, the camera kind of cuts, like, it's on your face, and then we cut to this scene many years ago. It's blurry in your memory. It's like amber haze with gun smoke and chemical weapons, and, like, the ground was frothing in a way you've never seen before or since. Something about the juice agitation, it was hit by, like, sonic weapons. The ground was moving like water, and people were screaming, and you had headphones on because you knew they were using sonic weaponry against you, and you were running and you were running, and it was like you were running through a nightmare, that you were just in place. And you looked up overhead and you saw the factory. You saw endless arcane, labyrinthine, twisted metal, and they were firing at you from orbit, and people were dying, and people were melting, and the ground was loose, and your blood was rushing, and then you sprinted into the factory, and you breathed, and it was cold, and it was dark, and you were alive. And then we cut back, and you look at Enla and her, like, her wide, hopeful face. Maybe they'll be our friends. When you think about what friendship really means in moments like that, who is going to have your back when they are firing down on you again?
I don't know that they'll be our friends, Enla. I don't know that they're the type to watch anyone's back. But they've got a bone to pick, and maybe we can use that in our favor.
Do you guys have trust between you? Because if you don't, you
do
now.
I say, I feel like we do now, yeah.
Yeah, I think both of you take off one stress for that and establish trust. How are we all doing on stress at this point?
3.
Same.
I got 0.
No. Connie's
you're great.
Chilling. He's a loose goose.
Yeah, Lottie trusts, at least as far as I have in here, is Tank and Enla. And now I trust everybody in the group, Tank, Connie, and Lottie.
Yeah, we haven't used trust in a minute. Well,
trust has literally saved me from trauma.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. We love our friends. All right, and the camera pulls away. Actually, as it pulls back, we see the top of the greenhouse. Like, it's so fucking hotboxed in here. Like, it's just greasy smoke. Just like, you look like you're inside of an engine or something. I don't know. Connie, what are you going to do with your last downtime action?
We've been sort of dealing off and on with this horrible shrill sound that we figured out last time I investigated it, that it was ultrawave radio, and it was coming from underground. So I think I'm going to try and put a stop to whoever is doing that. I've basically zeroed in on the location that it's happening. So I think I'm just going to try to go there and figure it out and get them to stop.
Yeah. Would you take anyone with you?
You
could take PCs, you could take NPCs, you could take both.
So no, I'm going to go it alone.
Okay. Where are we at on the progress on that clock?
It's like 3 out of 4, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're almost there. All right, why don't you give me a roll for the clock? Like, how are you going to progress your quest?
My way of doing this, I think, at the moment is probably examining, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to figure out who and why. So.
Yeah. Well, Petra gave you a little handheld radio rig.
Yeah.
So as I think we see you, is this nighttime again when you're heading out for this? Or what time of day would you do this?
I think probably nighttime. Yeah.
All right. As you're heading out with your radio, you see Petra leaving and Yanush coming in. So we have that moment. If you wanted to talk to him, you could.
Can't even look at that man right now.
Yanush kind of gives you a shifty look, but does not say anything.
I say absolutely nothing.
Ice cool. Yeah. All right, so you've got your little handheld radio. It's not raining anymore. It's a nice, clear night. You're walking around in sweltering heat. You pull out the antenna. You start walking. As you are walking, you know the signal's underground, and you find your way to this entrance of a skimmer tunnel. And I think it would make sense you would have brought Lottie's, like, skimmer pass, you know? Like, you would know about that.
Yeah.
So you've got that around your neck. You wave it at the guy. They wave you on through. And so then it's just you alone in the dark. Do you have anything for illumination, or you're in the tunnels, you know? What did you do knowing you'd be underground?
I assume I had a flashlight or something, you know, something simple, some lamp for illumination.
Okay, yeah. What's it look like?
I think it's one of those, like, little camping lamps. Not like a gas lamp, but, you know, like one of those LED lamps that are kind of plastic, and you just sort of hold them with the one metal hook.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It blinks off and on sometimes. It's not that great, but, you know, you got it. What color is the light?
I think it's a white light. It can be adjusted to be red, because that's what camping lamps are like.
Fair. All right, so you're walking around in the tunnels. You're hearing things scuffling in the dark. You know, there's fox fingers down here. You know, there's, like, worms and, you know, your classic sci-fi planet big fucking worm, baby. But you're walking alone in the darkness, and the signal's getting stronger. And I'm picturing it kind of like a Geiger counter, where as you are turning down corridors, it's just getting a little bit clearer and clearer every time. At first, it's static, and then every so often, a voice is cutting through. And you hear the same message repeating over and over again. And the first few times, you just catch a few words until it's building and it's building. And eventually, the message that you get sounds like a kid. And this kid is saying,
"Breaker, ULDX-30. Emergency? I'm sorry. Net control? I don't know any of the right protocol. I'm sorry. ULDX, Net-30. Emergency. I'm call sign Rambo. I'm requesting assistance. My uncle needs help. I'm here in the long waits. He's in a blue tent with a heart on it. I don't know what's wrong with him, but he needs help. Breaker ULDX. Breaker ULDX. This is call sign Rambo on Breaker ULDX-30.
And it's like that, just on loop. And you're walking closer and closer. What are you thinking as you're hearing this?
I think I pick up the pace, because this is definitely something, this is something weird. This is not what I was expecting in the slightest. But it's obviously someone who needs help, and I'm the only one who can seemingly find them, so.
Yeah. As you're walking, you realize you've been hearing this for days. Like, this shrill sound has been going on for, if not days, then at least a week or two. And so you are rounding tunnels. You're kind of in the bad part of the tunnels, where some of them are crumbled and caved in. And I know you have that innate sense of direction, right? And that's coming in handy here, because a lot of other people would have panicked by now, because you are truly just, like, walking around. Oh, dead end. All right, right here, left here, you know? And the signal is getting stronger and clearer. This isn't even a proper tunnel anymore. It's sort of half caved in. It's short. It's jagged metal and sand and gravel and big old stuff just smash into the earth, and you see an opening that's, like, barely large enough for you to fit through. So you have to get on your hands and knees, like, throw your, like, radio gear in front of you, and then just army crawl through. And when you get on the other side, you start seeing huge shapes in the dark. You see something wide and flat. It sparkles in the, like, glint of your light. You see a huge cylinder. You see wires exploding out of it. This is a satellite. This is a downed satellite. And you see that part of it is jacked up to what looks like a homemade something or other. You see parts and wires and, you know, generators. Something is chugging with an engine. And you don't hear, like, you're hearing the message from your radio, but it's not broadcasting out loud. Like, it doesn't need to be here it is almost perfectly clear as you are approaching this downed satellite, which is a miracle in itself. Like, you've never seen an intact satellite before. It's huge. It's the size of like several cars in length. And it strikes you, this is a work of incredible skill to have retrofitted a downed communication satellite that is smashed and under the earth. This must have been an incredible effort. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're in this cave. It's quiet except for your radio. You hear your heart in your throat. What do you do?
I gotta look around for people. Is this thing just broadcasting a recorded message?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're kind of crawling hands and foot. You're ducking under big jagged metal in the dark. And you see a little tin cup on the ground. And you see, you know, a tarp. And you see some bits and pieces. You see popsicle sticks. And you see, you know, old rotted food just sort of like wedged into the earth. Somebody's been living down here. And then you move your light and eyes flash in the dark. And you see a kid, maybe 9 or 10. He is pressed up against the wall of the place. He's trying to be small. He's trying to be dark. He's covered in junk and blankets. He's trying to remain unnoticed.
Hey, kid, what are you doing here?
Leave me alone.
No,
Leave me alone.
I came to help. You said something about your uncle?
Yeah, but I need medical. I need, like I know there's spaceships up there.
I can help as much as I can. I don't know if any of the spaceships are going to come down for us. Come on, let's get you out of here. This is unsafe. Let's get you and... I look around for the uncle. Like, let's get you and your uncle out of here.
He's not here. I couldn't move him. He looks at you. He's pretty scared. Do you want to roll something here?
Yeah.
I think care is the right one. Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to push myself. I don't want to fail this.
Yeah. Well, also, this could be technically an unplanned mission. So you do have a load of 2, and you do have flashbacks, but they cost an extra stress. Yeah, so, yeah. You know.
I can use a survival kit, right?
Yeah, you actually could. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to spend a load to have a survival kit, to have, like, easy access to food and drink for this child or something to persuade. This.
Yeah, okay. Add +1 dice to your roll.
Okay. Don't fuck me. Yep. Okay. 5.
What do you pull out of your backpack or whatever? You know, what do you offer?
From the survival gear, I probably have something from the Scream and Slice itself. Probably like a little, like mushroom jerky.
Ooh, I like that.
Like a dried mushroom thing.
My brain just immediately went to Tank's fucking bone powder.
Hell no.
No.
First of all, that's Tank's. Yeah.
Okay, so you're holding out mushroom jerky. His eyes dart from the food up to you and then back to the food. Looks like he's been down here a minute. Snatches it out of your hand, starts eating it.
Come on, take me to your uncle. Let's get you out of here. And then we can figure out this. I mean, you engineered an ultrawave radio, it seems like. Was that you? Was that your uncle?
Yeah, that was me. Speaking with his mouth full, super chewy. Yeah, Because my uncle always said that they just didn't know we were here, you know? Because they could help if they knew, but nobody knew how to reach them.
Look, I can get your uncle. We'll get you above the surface, at least, and you know, to a little sanctuary. You're starving down here. This isn't helping anyone. We can find someone who can help you.
Kind of looks at you. Mostly what you see in this kid is exhaustion. Like, you are convincing, you did give him food, but mostly he is tired and he's been trying for a long time. And so he slowly nods.
Let's get this turned off. We have a radio station where I live. We can use that next time.
Do you have radio?
Yes. I'll make sure that you get to use it.
Okay. Okay. And you see him run up and he's flipping buttons, moving stuff around. There's a huge lever, my favorite thing, a big sci-fi lever, ka-chunk. And then it's the two of you back out through the tunnels. He's really good at navigating down here. He's been down here a minute. You get a better look at him out in the open. T-shirt, just hanging out, long hair, kind of matted. And he knows where the exits are. Like, he's kind of mm-hmm. leading you out. And he's like, so the St. Selena said that they don't come to the long waits anymore for safety. But if we can get him there, that would be okay, right? Like,
we'll get him there.
Okay. Okay. And so, do you talk at all as you're going through the tunnels, or you're just hustling out of there?
I think I am talking to him, mainly just to make this child more comfortable.
Yeah.
So, what's your name?
Rambo?
Rambo.
That's nice. He says convincingly.
So sorry.
Rambo's a nice name. I'm sad that we had to meet in these circumstances, but... how long have you been down here?
It was just like he's always like kind of sick, but like he stopped waking up a while back, and so it's been like I think like a couple weeks. But like if I leave, then like if the satellite goes off, then I won't know, you know? So like I just had to like stay and make sure it was going.
Yes, you did good. You did the right thing, but now we can do more. So let's just get your uncle. Let's get out of here. I know some people who could take a look at him.
All right. So we are hustling. We're up through the tunnels, and he's saying, like, okay, this way. And you are headed into the Long Waits, which is a place I don't think you've ever been before. So Bugtown is pretty well to do. Like, it's on the solid side of not very wealthy. The Long Waits is rough. The Long Waits is tents, and it's people sleeping in the open. The Long Waits is where you go when you have nowhere else. You do feel that kind of like, like just looking out at a sea of shapes in the dark.
After Connie was expelled from his temple and his religion, which was basically his livelihood at the time, I think he would have been in a place similar to this, if not the Long Waits specifically. Like, you know, he was thrown out onto the streets, starving, didn't really have any connections or anything. I feel like he probably went to the Scream and Slice because there was food in the food court and just happened to run into Halbert who took him in at that point. But he's not foreign to places like the Long Waits. Like, he doesn't feel at home or anything, but this is a thing he's experienced before.
The briefest of flashbacks to Connie, freshly out of the temple, heartbroken, starving, walking around looking for food, and you hear on a street in the middle of the day, "Hey, blue head!" And you look over and you see Halbert, and she's pointing to her head, and she goes, "I got a blue head!" And then it cuts out. That's the first time you ever met Halbert.
Yeah, that's on Bryn.
Yeah.
I love that.
So walking back into the Long Waits, you have that moment of thinking you've come pretty far. Some kind of hurt in your heart that is good and bad, that you are where you are now and you're ready to walk back in with this kid. And he's moving so easy and free. Like, he is very comfortable with this. He's dodging around tents. Certain people are turning to watch you guys. You are an unfamiliar face in this area, at least. You hear like low voices. You hear someone's talking out loud, low, rhythmic. You hear the drum circle. There's an eternal drum circle here that never stops. People just drop in and out. So right now the drums are slow and steady, as they often are at night. And you finally, the kid pulls up to a tent with a big heart spray painted on the side. It's half collapsed. You see a heavy body underneath it, plastic tent draped over top. Looks like a man, looks like big, heavy, weighs more than you, isn't moving. What do you do?
Well, I'm definitely going to examine this man.
Yeah.
To see like what's going on. Any, you know, if he's hurt or if he's even alive.
You didn't kneel down next to him. You see vomited, like old vomit on the mouth nearby. Smell so awful. Let's roll. Fortune roll. Evens, he's alive.
Single dice.
Yep. Unless you want to put some sauce on it somehow.
I don't think I can. I don't think there's anything I could do for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
The kid is keeping his distance, looks at you, waiting.
I drape the plastic tent over the uncle's face again. And I like, I'll go up to the kid, assuming that he lets me. I'm going to hold him close.
Yeah.
And while I'm doing this, because I am still thinking about what to do here, I'm going to contact Runk. I'm just gonna send him a little page of like, hey, we need a pickup. And I'll say, Rambo, we'll get your uncle out of here. I know someone with, you know, a big enough sled to carry him. But I'm sorry. Your uncle is... There's nothing we or St. Selena can do for him.
He looks at you. He's crying silently, just big tears just rolling down. You think he already knew. You think that he knew a while ago. He just didn't want it to be true. You're sitting down next to this body in the dark, kid beside you, and you wait. And we see, like, the sun rising over the horizon. We see Runk eventually pulling up on their big, crazy skimmer. Bodies moving out of the way, allowing them passage to come and get Rambo's uncle.
When Runk does show up, Connie says, like, let's take him to the food court. I think I want to give him his last rites.
And the camera pulls up and up and up, and we see the city of Fresco in all of its beauty and all of its pain. You see these big blue chips in the rising sun. We see a lot of people. We see all these little people and all their little lives. And the sun's rising on another day. We're going to do this again. It's just going to keep going.